Like most in-person interactions, most of the time you and I spend online passes without any threats to privacy or safety. But that doesn't mean we shouldn't be vigilant, especially when it comes not only to ourselves, but our children. Larry Mueller here. Really great to have you along today on the Ideas Network. We're lucky to have a great department working on consumer protection issues. They compile reports from people around the state and get information out to you and to me. And every month or so, they come by to share what they know with us. Sandy Chalmers is the administrator of the Division of Trade and Consumer Protection. Thank you for coming by, Sandy.
Good morning, Larry. Nice to be here.
Yeah, Michelle Reinen directs the Bureau of Consumer Protection. And Michelle, great to have you as well.
Thanks for having us again.
Well, I tell you what, we got lots to talk about here. And I know there are some great concerns about children's Social Security numbers being stolen and then used to obtain credit. How do they get this information?
Well, it happens a number of ways. First of all, the Social Security number is stolen by somebody who enters the home, or criminals can make up a Social Security number that coincidentally happens to be assigned to your children. But you know, the thing is, children's Social Security numbers are uniquely valuable to thieves because a child usually lacks a previous credit history, which means that the Social Security number can be paired with any name or birth date. And also, the Social Security number can be exploited over a long period of time because parents don't monitor children's credit files for misuse because children don't usually have credit histories. Another thing, if a thief is a family member, the crime is a lot less likely to be reported. And we have heard of situations where a family is maxed out on their credit and, you know, desperate. And so a parent or a guardian takes the Social Security number of a child and opens credit card accounts. It really is becoming more and more prevalent, unfortunately. One study I found that's mentioned by the Federal Trade Commission says 2.5% of U.S. households with minor children suffer child ID theft during the child's life. And again, the theft or misuse of the Social Security number is the most common way that that information is exploited.
Well, now, what are the signs that your child's information may have been hijacked?
Well, if you check with one of the credit reporting agencies, you may see that there is a credit report under your child's name with credit card accounts or home loans or, you know, it could be anything there. Sometimes you could be turned down for government benefits because the benefits are being paid to somebody else using that Social Security number. If you file your tax return, you may get a notice from the IRS saying that that Social Security number is being used by someone else, or you may be getting collection calls from debt collection agencies on an account that you know nothing about.
So lots of issues. What to do? Well, how do you prevent it first? Is there a way to prevent it?
Well, the most important thing is to keep your documents with personal information on them locked up tight. If you dispose of them, make sure you shred them first. We hear a lot of concern from parents with school-age kids about the number of organizations that are asking for that Social Security number. And your school should be sending you a disclosure that's required under federal law explaining what kind of information they keep about your child. But if it's anything else, or even your school, or a club, sport, something like that, and they're asking for your child's Social Security number, by all means, you as the parent should be asking, why do you need my child's Social Security number?
Right.
How are you protecting it? How long will you be keeping it? Who has access to it? And how will you dispose of it?
Yeah.
And so you as a parent need to be proactive on this.
And what happens, well, let's see, what happens if something bad happens? I mean, how do you correct it? I guess if it is stolen, what do you do, Sandy?
Well, then you're in a position where you're working with the credit reporting agencies, notifying the account holders. If it's a credit card company, you would want to notify them. You would probably be filing a criminal report with your local law enforcement agency. And if there is that kind of a record, you can also ask for a freeze on that account so that there won't be any further problems with it.
Isn't there a law being proposed that would give parents another tool? Can we talk about that a little bit?
Yeah,
Michelle, go ahead.
The legislature has introduced a bill that would allow parents to place a credit freeze on a child's Social Security number. So right now, in the good circumstances, there is no credit report that would come up for a child's Social Security number. This bill would make the credit reporting agencies create an account in that Social Security number and then place a freeze on it. So it can't be accessed by anybody and can't be used inappropriately. And then if there already is a credit report out there, then you would work with them in correcting that account because there would most likely be identity theft there. It hadn't been used by anybody. So the bill would really work to add a tool to the parents' kit of secure measures that they can take to keep that Social Security number safe from being abused by others and having it stolen.
Sounds like a good bill.
Right. Right now, all we can advise parents to do is to check to see whether there's a credit history on file with the credit reporting agencies. And if there is, well, then you know you have a problem and you're faced with corrective actions. And parents want to know what they can do proactively to keep that from happening. And as Michelle said, this bill would provide a tool to parents. You know, if they don't have to do it, but if they want to, they can pay the $10 fee or whatever it is and lock their child's credit down.
Mm. So, well, $10 might seem, that's kind of a cheap or inexpensive.
Probably cheaper than insurance or definitely cheaper than the cost in time and money of cleaning something up.
Yeah, absolutely. Talking today with Michelle Reinen and Sandy Chalmers of the Wisconsin Department of Agriculture, Trade, and Consumer Protection, taking a look at consumer issues with them. You may have one. I hope you'll join us at 1-800-642-1234, 1-800-642-1234. Email us at talk@wpr.org, or you can post a question on my Facebook page. Just go to the Larry Mehler Show. You can post a question or comment there. And one of the things we wanted to talk about as well, of course, is computers. And we do have an email from Jackie in Madison wondering about public library computers. Are they safe for online activities that require sometimes they require you put in a Social Security number or a date of birth, for instance, in order to get on. What do you think, Michelle?
I would definitely talk to the librarian, the head of the library, and find out what they do to keep their computers safe. They are public computers, so what do they do to monitor keyloggers being set up on those computers? How often do they update their antivirus software? What kind of secure system are they on? And how do they cleanse the cache and the history of the computer to make sure no one's able to go in and access that? And then look at the site and what you need to be doing in order to give that information. Again, as Sandy mentioned, talk to the library about, okay, I have to give you my date of birth or my Social Security number to log on. Why is that? Can't I just give you my library card number? Or is there another means of them making sure that you are an appropriate user, if that's what it's for? But what do they do with that information? How long do they keep it? What's the purpose of having to use that to log on?
Yeah, so there's lots to think about. Well, you know, this back to school time, we have, Renee and I have a 10-year-old. And she's online working on homework assignments right now. And, you know, at 10 years of age, and kids younger than her, too, and older, obviously. So You want to make sure it's a safe experience for your child. And, you know, virus protection, things like that, I know are important. And security, really important.
It is. It's extremely important. It's tweens and teens are at the age where you can sit down and have that conversation with them about online security. Here, look, we have to update the computer today, change our passwords, make sure our virus software is up to date, and now have the discussion about what information they should be sharing out there in public and why it's important not to share certain information, and introduce them to those experiences or repercussions of sharing that information, what can happen, because they're the ones who, in the future, when they're 18, 20, 21, trying to get a loan for school or a car or something, that will suffer that consequence of the information being used inappropriately. So starting the conversation with them early is really important, and making sure they understand what to share, what not to share.
And here's the thing. I spent some time with my grandnephew this summer. He's going to third grade, and mm-hmm. he has an iPhone.
Yeah.
And that's the way it is now. Well, make sure that those mobile devices, smartphones, iPads, tablets, make sure you have good antivirus and firewall software set up on those as well, because kids use those now more than they use a desktop.
Yeah, and geez, third grade, eh?
Yeah, that's right.
Well, we've so far kept an iPhone out of Emily's, although she uses ours all the time. She doesn't have her own yet, but... I expect there'll be a time when, as soon as you're old enough to, third grade, probably second grade, and then first grade. I don't know. Do you think it'll ever happen at first grade?
I would not be surprised.
Well, what, Michelle Reinen and Sandy Chalmers, our guest today, talking about a variety of things. We just started with online things and also with, social security numbers and that sort of thing. We have some other scams that are out there affecting a lot of people, I'm sure. And let's mention a few of those, and then we'll open the phones back up again and see what's on people's mind. So, Sandy, what's going on out there?
We've been hearing from people all over the state, off and on, for the last 6 months ago or so, about a senior alert scam. And people get calls, they're robocalls from companies who claim to be sending them free medical alert devices. And these companies seem to use a rotating list of names like Senior Emergency Care, Senior Safety Alert, or Senior Safe Alert. Most recently, we've heard these calls are coming also offering free food coupons that you can use at your local grocery store.
For crying out loud.
So these are obviously scams. They're preying on people's recognition of the lifeline senior alerts. What we think they're doing is seeking credit card numbers. And once you give one of these companies your credit card numbers, you can be sure that they'll charge you for something that you won't get. So remember, on these robocalls, most of them come from overseas. If you pick up the phone and hear that it's a robocall, our best advice to you is to just hang up, because it's an illegal call unless you've given them permission to call you.
Talking with Michelle Reinen and Sandy Chalmers today, if you have a consumer protection issue that you'd like to discuss, I hope you'll join us at 1-800-642-1234. Email us at talk@wpr.org or go to my Facebook page, post there at The Larry Mueller Show. I'm Larry Mueller. Judith Sears-Poisson, our producer on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. And if you have a consumer protection issue, I hope you will join us at 1-800-642-1234. Just kind of a look ahead today, later on today, at 2 o'clock, environmental science journalist Bruce Barkett joins Kathleen Dunn to talk about his search for the holy grail of green fuel. He wrote the recent cover story for On Earth magazine. I think it was titled Turning Grass into Gas. That's today at 2 o'clock. Right now, Sandy Chalmers and Michelle Reinen talking about consumer protection concerns. And let's take some calls. Chad in Green Bay, thank you very much for calling. What's on your mind?
Hi, thank you. Thank you for having me. I had been getting several calls last week from an agency who were trying to collect money on furthering child education. I didn't ask. I thought of it when I was listening to your program to ask where they were located, but I didn't really ask for any information. However, the weird thing of it was they were calling for a Danny, and I had said that, you know, they have the wrong phone number, and they proceeded to say, well, do you have children that you could benefit further child education, or do you know? And I said, no, I'm gay and I don't have children. And they said, well, do you know anybody who could benefit from this? And they kept on asking question and question. I said, no, could you take me off your list? They said yes, and then proceeded to call me two more times that day. But for a long time, I had been ignoring that call. Did you hear of anything about that?
Michelle?
Can't say that we've received any calls about that specific scenario, but it definitely sounds like something that would be in violation of our no-call list if your number were on the list. And so we'd encourage you to file a complaint, even if you have very little information, because that will help us establish if there is a trend or something new popping up out there that we need to be in contact with the company if we can track them down. Any solicitation that's made over the phone, that telemarketer would need to be registered and shouldn't be calling consumers on our Wisconsin no-call list.
Yeah, and they're required by law to disclose to you the name of the company and what it is they're selling. So by being vague like that, they may be violating state law.
Mm-hmm.
And they sure were, too. Well, okay, thank you very much. I appreciate you taking my call.
Yeah, thanks, Chad. And let's turn to Ron in Newburgh next. Ron, hi.
Yes, good morning. My question is sort of along the same line. I'm getting a whole bunch of phone calls that I'm not asking for. Some of them just stay out of state. Some of them have phone numbers. If I backcall that number and go on a computer, it'll tell me who's calling me, and frequently it'll say this phone call or this phone number has been subject to spam. Well, why aren't those kinds of numbers just taken off, that they you know, abandon those phone numbers? And I'm wondering, do you keep track of when that has to be renewed, that no call list? That should just be automatically renewed. Otherwise, when you renew it, apparently there's a blank time of a month or something like that before it takes effect. Well,
okay. Well, let's get Sandy Chalmers in to answer at least these questions. Ryan, you may have something else, but.
Yeah.
There has been a bill introduced in the state legislature to make that no-call registration permanent. And we've heard over and over from consumers, why do we have to have that 2-year registration? It's so hard to remember when to renew our registration. So that's something that I think you would be pleased to hear about. And Michelle and I have both testified at committee hearings on that bill. On this issue of the phone numbers, and when you look them up online, they seem to be disconnected or spam or something like that. Remember that, first of all, most of these no-call violators are sitting somewhere overseas, which makes it very, very difficult for us to reach out and take action against them on an enforcement basis. And technology is great, but criminals are hiding behind that technology, and it's very easy to mask the number that shows up on your caller ID. And crooks do that because they know it's more difficult for us to track them down. So one thing we recommend is that you screen your calls, and if a number pops up that you don't recognize, then just let it go to voicemail, because chances are it's a a robocall that is coming into you from somewhere in Russia or India or Pakistan or somewhere like that.
There you go. Good luck. Thank you very much for calling, Ron. Appreciate your call. So there may be, at some point, the legislature, everything goes according to some people's plans.
So you would sign up once for the no-call list and you
and
would
be
done as long as you had that phone number.
Yep.
Very welcome for consumers.
Yep. Bea in Westfield, your turn. Thanks for calling, Bea.
Well, thank you. I just wanted to make a comment regarding personal information. You know, when you go to the grocery store, you make a purchase. If you pay with a check, they want your phone number. Sometimes they ask for your social security number. The same thing when you go to the hospital, you go to a clinic. I think that's a perfect opportunity for someone who has harm in mind to collect information, personal information, because they ask you, you know, your birthday. They ask you so much information, how to spell your last name, your address, that if someone was really collecting that kind of information, they have everything you need about that person.
Yeah, comments? Michelle?
You're absolutely right, Bea. A lot of people ask for more information than what they need. At the grocery store, if you're paying by check, they need to know how to track you down should the check not be of sufficient funds. So a phone number is more appropriate. Often that's in the phone book, so it's not protected information. But a Social Security number, that goes further, and we advise never to write that information on your check because the check is viewed by many people and sometimes stored online. At a
absolutely.
Yep, and at a hospital, they want to verify through records that they're dealing with the right person and they're cross-referencing information, and there's many federal laws that protect medical information and how it needs to be secured and stored. So that's a place with insurance, cross-referencing and payments where they're going to collect more information, and dates of birth come into play with how they'll provide treatments and different things oftentimes, too. So just evaluating at each stage, you know, who you're giving the information to and how they're going to be using it and why they may be asking for it, how it's secured, is what you need to be doing when you're providing that. But some are going to demand it in order to provide you services, and there are good reasons for it.
Mm-hmm. Right. I have come to situations like that I have refused to provide, you know, information that I feel that is too personal, that I don't really think that they really need. And, you know, then you have to make the choice of, do you want the service or not?
Yeah, that's exactly right. I've had that same choice to make sometimes, B, and sometimes I've given in, and other times I've said, no, I don't need the service if I have to give that information out. Thank you very much for calling. I appreciate it. You may have a question, a consumer alert question. Maybe something has happened to you, or you've heard about some other situations relating to consumer scams. Give us a call at 1-800-642-1234. Email us at talk@wpr.org or post on my Facebook page at The Larry Mueller Show. Love to hear from you. An email from Laura, who said over the weekend, I got two text messages on my phone telling me it was my carrier and my carrier account, Verizon, was locked. I needed to go to the website and verify my data. I knew that, first, Verizon couldn't ask me to go somewhere to verify data. And second, the website had no carrier name on it. And third, my husband's phone number is the account holder. So I called my carrier, and of course our account was not locked and they hadn't sent a text. I've heard of these types of emails, but not text messages. Has that begun as well? Sandy Chalmers.
Unfortunately, text spam and text scams have been around for a few years now, and crooks know that most people carry around phones with them, and so it's a convenient and cheap way for them to make a pitch to you. Sounds like you handled everything just right. The worst thing you can do is click on a link that comes with an unsolicited text message. Quite frequently, that will download malicious software onto your phone or computer. So you handled it just right. One other thing I might mention is that the Wisconsin no-call law now includes a no-text provision. So if your cell phone number is on the no-call list, this text you got was in violation of state law. And we have had a few investigations since that law was passed. So if you would like to, you could file a complaint and we could look into it more closely.
And the complaint would go, it's 800 number to go get that information?
It's 1-800-422-7128 is the hotline number.
800-422-7128?
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Or actually, we have it posted up on my Facebook page, too, at the Larry Mueller Show. There's a link to the department, so that'll work as well. I was talking to a friend last week at some point. His computer, he got a message one day saying, your computer is locked up, and if you want it to be unlocked, you're going to have to pay a certain amount of money. And frankly, it was locked up, and he had to take it into, he took it into a company that here in the Madison area that said they've had to unlock many computers. So there's some sort of maliciousness going on out there.
Quite frequently that one originates in an email that looks like it's from the FBI or other law enforcement and saying that you owe us money for something you did, and you click on a link and that downloads the software. So,
oh, is that what happened? Yeah. Okay. That's something to be really, you get something supposedly from the FBI.
Right. Or other government agency. The FBI does not send you emails if you violated federal law. You know, that just doesn't happen that way. But when we get notifications from the FBI, we usually try to get that information out on our Facebook page or through the media to let people know that this is a scam that's going on right now, so you know what to look for.
Lynn in Iron River, thank you for calling. Hello.
Hi, Larry. Thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
Regarding the lady who called earlier, asking why when you call a medical office or a hospital, we ask for your birth date and, not necessarily a social security number, but address, telephone number. The reason I work at a medical clinic, and the reason that, excuse me, we have to verify that information, because of the HIPAA privacy laws. We have to verify that information in order to be sure we have the correct person on the phone. She's right. We probably do have that information. But if we don't verify that information and then subsequently that person starts asking for medical information that we have on file about that person, we're giving their medical information to someone we don't know for sure we're talking to the right person.
Yeah. Yeah, that makes sense.
You know, and I understand people are reluctant to give, you know, that PIN information, but we're required to do that in order to, like I said, to make sure we're not giving their personal medical information to someone who's not them.
Yeah, and I'm seeing more and more nowadays, Lynn, that I'm being asked sort of like a password question. So, like, you know, you have, we all have online, you have little checks and balances that you type in your best friend's from grade school's name or whatever. And that can be done in person as well. And I'm getting that a little bit more. And
right. That
makes things a little easier.
Yeah, right.
Yeah.
Okay. Well, I just wanted to make that point that, you know,
mm-hmm.
We have to be sure we're speaking to the correct person.
Yeah, it makes perfect sense, doesn't it, Sandy?
It does, and that's something that's in place to protect the patient and
right.
the patient's privacy. And that's different from something that comes to you from Facebook saying, enter now for a chance to win a free pair of cowboy boots or whatever, and they ask you for your name and address and email. That's when you need to think twice about, do I really want to share this information with this company?
Yeah. Renee in Chippewa Falls. Hi, thank you for calling.
Hi, I wanted to comment on the Social Security number. We recently are switching to a satellite dish for TV, and I checked out both the large companies in our area, and one of them wouldn't give me service without my Social Security number, so I actually went with the one that did not demand it.
Why would they need the Social Security number?
Well, they said for a credit check, but the other one didn't need to have it for the credit check.
Yeah, Michelle?
Yeah, each company is going to set its own policy as far as what risk base they'll take. And the one company is giving equipment, loaning equipment. It's in the home. It's an establishment of credit again. So they want to do that, as she said, credit check and make sure that you're a secure investment for that company.
Yeah.
Yeah, I wouldn't give it. So we went with the one that didn't demand it.
Good for you. Thanks,
yeah,
Renee.
Thank you. Yeah, bye.
Bye-bye. Appreciate it. Ted in Appleton, hello.
Hi. I have two questions, Larry, for your guest.
Sure.
First one, I had a fraudulent transaction on my PayPal account. Somebody must have got my PIN, my personal ID, and got in and made a $3,900 transaction. And fortunately, PayPal flagged it, called me, and we were able to, you know, obviously reverse that. But I was curious, and I asked the guy from PayPal, I said, you know, do you guys pursue these people? I mean, there's some guy named Kevin Swindle from Georgia. And I said, does anybody go after these people, or do you just reverse the charges and take it away, and he goes back to what he was doing before this happened?
And what did they say?
He said that he did not, and that's a separate entity that pursues them. But he wouldn't give me any details, and I'm just wondering if your guest had any. Is there any secondary follow up that can be done with these people? Because if nobody does anything and they just keep doing this, I think that's almost as bad as the crime itself.
Yeah. Well, thanks, Ted, for calling. Michelle, Reinen?
Well, every company kind of sets its own internal fraud investigation and what level they're going to be doing that investigation. So a Visa, a MasterCard, they do have that internal auditing and investigation that they're doing. PayPal, I think it depends on what trends that they see, and it's in their interest to look into them, but I think they probably also have thresholds where some get written off and let go, and if they're not seeing a pattern or if they can get at the individual. So the proof or the evidence, the fact base, probably has a lot of determination with different things.
Yep.
Here's some kind of general advice for users of PayPal and Craigslist and any kind of online classified ads or anything like that. Before you use that service, read the most recent fraud postings from the company itself on the website, and they'll let you know specifically what to look out for. And it sounds like in your case, Eric, this kind of came from out of the blue. Right.
Ted is, yeah.
Or Ted. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, it did. And I do small transactions with PayPal, and this one, you know, obviously was
way out of line.
Quite a bit of line. And they have some type of filter built in so that when something like that happens, it's immediately flagged and they call their client to inform them, which I'm thankful for because I probably would have let it go for whatever period of time. Which brings up one other question, because he asked me if I had any other fraudulent transactions on my credit cards, and I had about 6 months ago, and they said, well, you might want to consider a LifeLock protection service or something like that. And I was wondering what your opinion is on those services. And I'll take my answer off.
Okay, thanks for calling. And maybe you can explain LifeLock, what this means.
Well, what those services provide are, it's a monitoring service. They'll go out and do your credit report checks, and they'll monitor your credit cards for activities, or it depends what level of service you're providing. Often there's some kind of insurance or guarantee that if identity theft then happens to you while they're doing this monitoring, they'll help you recover and they'll cover the costs, or maybe there's a deductible. There's lots of different kinds of insurances out there and services like a LifeLock by name. But these are all things that you can do as an individual yourself. It's just, what are you willing to do time-wise and investment-wise versus what services you want to pay for? And know if you're paying for the service, you're having to hand over to that company your personal information in order for them to be able to monitor for you. So every consumer can check their own credit report for free once a year. We advise that you do one of each of the three on a rotational basis, so that way you're checking every 4 months. You can opt out of credit card offers, so you minimize the amount of extensions of credits you get, and thus you would have less risk of identity theft through people taking out credit in your name. Check your credit card bills for fraudulent activity, charges that you didn't make, cramming, which is extra fees on there. Be looking at your insurance, be checking your medical records, all those different steps and stages that you can do yourself. So it's what level of investment or time that you can commit to doing that monitoring.
We'll take some more calls. Eric and Madison, you're next. Thank you for calling. Hi.
Hi, thanks for taking my call. I had an incident where I had actually left my wallet at a gas station in Green Bay and didn't realize it until I got back to Madison. Luckily, I called the gas station, and they had all of my credit cards and even my money and my Costco card and everything like that, but they did not have my driver's license, which I thought was really strange. So they mailed everything back to me. So I had to go to get a new driver's license, and when I asked the folks at the DMV if I could get, well, if they could change my number, because I had heard on this program before to, not to put your driver's license number on your checks or anything like that, and they wouldn't do it. They couldn't do it, they said. They could not change my driver's license number itself. So I guess I'm kind of wondering what level of concern should I have as far as identity theft or, anything, outside of doing what you had just stated as far as checking credit reports and things like that.
Yeah.
It would be a good idea for you to check with the credit reporting agencies, as Michelle just described, to see whether there's any activity on your credit report that you don't remember authorizing. Otherwise, we have had cases in the Madison area where people go into retail stores with fraudulent altered driver's licenses from other states and establish credit. So I that would be the best place to start, to just keep a very, very careful watch on your credit report to look for any kind of fraudulent activity.
And taking that to the extreme, Eric, I'd also see if you can file a police report. While you've gotten a new driver's license, and that will be in your driver's license record, should you have your driver's license and then try and use it if they commit a crime or get pulled over, you'd have it on file with the police department that your license was stolen. And if they're trying to impersonate you, I mean, that's the other extreme of identity theft, the criminal side of it, where you end up with some kind of police record for crimes that you've never committed. So I would call that a local police department area where you lost your driver's license in Green Bay, and see if you can just get an online report on file so there's a record that this your ID disappeared.
Very good points. Good luck, Eric. Thank you very much for calling. Appreciate it. Michelle Reinen and Sandy Chalmers of the Wisconsin Department of Agriculture, Trade, and Consumer Protection, our guests today as we talk with them about computer scams, all kinds of scams going on out there in Wisconsin and everywhere across the country. Larry Mueller on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Thanks so much for listening in today as we talk consumer issues with our guests, Sandy Chalmers and Michelle Reinen. Consumer protection issues abound, and so it's always great to have them with us, and thank you for calling in and for listening in. We have Fred in Minong with a question next. Fred, thanks for waiting. Hello.
Hello, and thanks for giving out all of this very interesting and valuable information on your show. I enjoy it very much.
Thank you.
I'm 78 years old, so I've been around for a while, and I've seen a lot of scams. Of course, they can go back to the loads of them that comes in from Nigeria about your relative that died and left you $1 million, and you send them $500 for research, and they'll send you the money, you know, that one. But regarding giving information, for instance, at a clinic or when you go to renew your driver's license or other occasions, I have made it a habit never to verbally give them the information they ask for, because people standing in line right behind me or around me, they can get that information if I just speak up and give it to them verbally. I always ask them for a pencil and a pad, and I write this information down and give it to them, and they can enter it in the necessary paperwork, but I don't have to spread that verbally to the person standing behind me.
Now, what do you think, Sandy?
I think that's a great idea, and that's been happening at hotels for a number of years now. When they check in a woman, they'll write the number of the hotel room rather than saying it out loud, and I think that's a great idea. Something else you should think about when you're entering a PIN number, when you use a debit card at the store, make sure that nobody standing beside you in line can see what your PIN number is.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. Thank you, Fred. I appreciate your call. And we have, let's see, I only had some questions on a line here that I wanted to get to as well. What would you suggest to the citizens of Wisconsin to help ensure the no-call list is changed to be perpetual and not just 2 years? Do you have a bill number or at least the names of the sponsors of the bill, Sandy?
I don't have the bill number, but the assembly sponsor is Representative Keith Ripp from Lodi, and the Senate sponsor is Senator Tom Tiffany.
Okay, so there we go. And those are people to get a hold of. Or your own representative, for sure. What prevents, and this is from Dennis on Facebook, what prevents a scammer or crook from getting the no-call list, thereby getting a list of known good numbers? How is the no-call list distributed to only legitimate companies? How does that work, Michelle? That's a good question.
Well, in order to obtain the list from the state of Wisconsin, you have to register as a telemarketer. There's an application. You have to fill it out completely, or we don't give you the list. And then there's a renewal period, and there's payment periods, and we follow up. And then if we start to get complaints from consumers that you're receiving calls and that company's no longer registered, we follow up with them to make sure that they're no longer using an old list. I mean, we do a full investigation into that. If we're getting calls about a company that's never been registered with us, we look into it and do those investigations. And so that's why it's so important for consumers to speak out and let us know what's going on and file consumer complaints, even if their tolerance level may be at its peak. It's important that we hear from you because we do follow up on those things.
Right. It is a violation of state law to pass on the list or to sell the list to somebody else. And unfortunately, again, with today's auto-dialing technology, it's much easier just to program a computer to do the auto-dialing for the robocalls than it is to find an old copy of the state no-call list and use those numbers.
Mark in Oshkosh emailed and said for several weeks now he's been getting emails saying there's damaging information about to come out about his family and friends are going to see it, and the only way to stop it is to click on a link they give. He said, I can't think of what could be so terrible that I've done, so I just deleted.
Yeah, we hear about those scams every once in a while, and sometimes they can get pretty threatening and hostile. You may want to report this to your local law enforcement just to create a record that this is happening. But the absolute correct thing to do is what you're doing, and that's to delete it. Usually clicking on that link will download software under your computer that will track your keystrokes or allow somebody somewhere in the world to spy on what you're doing online.
Keith in Rhinelander, thanks for calling. Hello.
Hi. Just at the end of August, I went to renew the registration on my automobile.
Yep.
And I've done it before, and I went to the necessary website that's on your renewal card, and I got into it, and all of a sudden it routed me or railroaded me to another website, which is called carregistration.com.
Okay.
And they never asked anything about my car because, you know, they got that, I believe it's like a 5 or 6 digit number that you enter, and then it brings up all your information.
Yeah.
But they asked about credit card information. I'm thinking, well, you know, maybe the state is outsourcing this. So I went ahead and did it and entered all that information on my credit card. And the first thing they wanted was they wanted me to re-enter all that credit card information on the next, whatever it is, next page on the computer. And that's when I decided there's something wrong here. And now I've got this charge on my credit card. One charge is for $1.99, and the other one is for $14.73. All right.
Yeah.
But it never asked anything about my automobile. So, you know, I'm not real computer savvy here. So, I mean, I got out of there, and then I went back, and then I was able to get into where I had to register my automobile. Well, I get to looking, and here I've got a $16.72 charge from this carregistration.com, and it's got a 10-digit number on the bottom that, and at the end, it's got the letters OH. What I'm wondering is, has anybody else ever encountered this?
All right. Let's go to Michelle Reinen.
Well, there's a couple parts. I don't know, just sitting here, if we've had other complaints on that. We'd have to check our database. It doesn't sound completely familiar, but the redirection of emails, that's a common scam. If being very careful to key in an appropriate website, but that if you're redirected without being told or notified, often if a state site's going to redirect you to a payment system, they're going to tell you up front that that's going to happen. So it's good you caught it on your credit card bill that the charge is there. I would call DOT and make sure that your auto registration has happened. Report this to them so they can be looking at any redirection that may be happening from their site. But then contact your credit card company and make sure you're disputing the charges with them so they can remove the charges. And then also monitor that you don't end up with these charges every single month. That's called cramming. And you may have some kind of service you've inadvertently signed up for and want to make sure that that's getting corrected. And they may want to change your credit card number when you explain what's happened to them, because someone else may have the access to that information. So they may just issue you a new card.
Yeah, I actually had that happen to me, Keith, and I had a new card issued. It wasn't the same situation, but I got a $1.99 charge and another one for like $4. And those were...
Oh, mine was 14 something.
Yeah, mm-hmm. And it's something that if you're not looking on your bill, you're not going to notice that.
Well, you know, it's that funny feeling you get in the seat of your pants when you know something's just not right here.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, I actually 2 months in a row got new credit card numbers. I had the same thing happen to me two months in a row, and now it's been about 6 months, but. The credit card company was wonderful. I mean, they were really helpful. They wiped out those charges and helped me, you know, get all set up again. And I was really pleased with how that company performed, to be honest. So, good luck, Keith. Thank you for calling. Appreciate your call. We have another email from Patricia. Heard and read online that if you post a photograph taken on your phone on social media, that photograph can be traced back to the exact location where it was taken, and other personal information can be extracted from the photograph. Would you kindly comment on this? My grandchildren's pictures are fairly often posted on my daughter's Facebook page, and I worry about that.
Yeah, that's called geotagging. And now a lot of smartphones that are GPS enabled have that function where you take the photograph and the location is embedded within that photograph. And we often warn about this in conjunction with family vacations because people will post their photographs on Facebook and anybody looking at the photograph can get that information and figure out that you're in Florida, which means your house is empty and unguarded. So that is something to be careful about. And if you don't want that to happen, turn off the function on your phone or iPad.
Yeah, that makes excellent sense. Well, we are talking today about a whole host of consumer protection issues with our two guests. Michelle Reinen is the director of the Bureau of Consumer Protection. Sandy Chalmers is administrator of the Division of Trade and Consumer Protection with our Wisconsin Department of Ag, Trade, and Consumer Protection. They come by once a month to visit with us. You may have a question or a comment, and I hope, please join in. You can phone us at 1-800-642-1234, email us at talk@wpr.org, or go to my Facebook page. You can post there at The Larry Mueller Show, and click like while you're there, and we'll send you regular updates on upcoming show topics and a whole lot of other information. Stay with us. We'll be back right after the news. Great to have you with us here on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. When we're trying to stretch our budget, it's understandable that you might find deals more irresistible than ever, and sometimes they really are a great find. Other times, they turn out not to be so good. Hi, Larry Mueller here. Great to have you along today on the Ideas Network. It's important to know where to turn for help when you get caught up in a scam or to know how to avoid one in the first place, and we have a couple of guest experts, Sandy Chalmers and Michelle Reinen from the Department of Agriculture, Trade, and Consumer Protection with us until 12:30 to find out what experiences you've had and share what they know with you. You can join us at 1-800-642-1234, email us at talk@wpr.org, or post on my Facebook page at The Larry Mueller Show. Roger in Deer Park, Illinois, has been waiting a while and has a question for you guys. So let's go there. Roger, thanks for waiting.
Oh, you're welcome. Larry, I really appreciate you taking a personal interest in new crawlers here, and your show offers a great service to the public.
Thank you.
You're welcome. My question is this. I was hospitalized earlier this year and having some problems with the hospital. You know, I think I called you week and a half ago or so about it, the physical therapy. They gave me frozen shoulder. Anyway, they used this collection as kind of a something to keep you from having any legal recourse. In other words, you dispute the bill, they tell you it's on hold, and then they turn you into collection, or they threaten they're going to turn you into collection if you don't pay the bill. So I'm wondering how you deal with this. You know, I don't want to have my credit ruined. And they turned me into collection about 2 weeks ago, and then I had it reversed. And I wanted to pay my physical therapy bills. There's one other thing here, too. When I was in the hospital, I was getting these bills from room visits, and as far as I can tell, these doctors never showed up in my room, and yet they sent me a bill for a room visit, sometimes 3-4 visits a day. And I know they weren't in my room 3 or 4 times a day. So I'm disputing those bills, and then they send you a collection threat in red ink, and they tell you if you don't pay the bill, you're going to turn into a collection. So can they really use this collection like this as a means of forcing you to pay a bill that you're disputing?
Sort of beating you over the head with it. What do you think, Sandy Chalmers?
Well, Wisconsin, the Department of Financial Institutions has jurisdiction over collection issues. So they administer the laws having to do with collections and debt collectors. I'm not sure what Illinois law is, but since this is happening in Illinois, I would suggest that you contact whichever agency in Illinois that deals with collection issues.
So it's a here it's the Department of Collections? Is that what it's called?
Department of Financial Institutions.
Department of Financial Institutions.
Right.
So there should be something just like it in Illinois. All right. So that's what you need to do, Roger. If you can get a hold of the Department of Financial
Institutions
In Illinois and work with them, because it does sound, I mean, it is a little like a chicken and egg. If you are disputing a bill, you'd think you wouldn't have to pay that bill until the dispute is settled.
Yeah, unless there's some ongoing, they make a determination it's valid, and then maybe you need to get the courts or an attorney involved, you know, whatever level. But again, that Department of Financial Institutions equivalent in Illinois should be able to help sort it out.
All right. Good luck. Thank you, Roger, for calling. Appreciate it. Tim and Shano, on to you. Hi, Tim.
Hi, afternoon. Thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
Say, I don't have a scam that I'm dealing with, but I had purchased an enclosed trailer from a dealer in Michigan, and the trailer was manufactured in Indiana about 2.5 years ago, and it's a United trailer, and it comes with a 5-year structural warranty, and we just did the brakes on the trailer, and we found all sorts of cracks on the frame. The trailer's it's junk, basically. I've contacted the dealer. I've actually spoke with somebody from the manufacturer, and what they want me to do is they want me to bring that trailer to one of their dealers, which is about 5 hours away, and have him weld up bracing on the frame. And I'm contesting that that's not going to solve the problem. There's a structural issue, and that's why the frame itself is cracking. Patching it isn't going to solve anything. You know, there's some defect in there that made it crack in the first place, whether it's, you know, bad steel or if the thing's not square. But they really aren't interested in that. They're just interested in patching it and sending it out my way. And then what do I want to do with it when I, you know, want to sell this trailer? You know, it's a junk trailer. Any advice on how to handle a situation like that? Really what I'd like is either for them to just buy the trailer back or give me a new trailer. You know, it's a 25-foot trailer. It's not a cheap little trailer.
Yeah.
And it's only 2.5 years old. It hasn't been overloaded. It hasn't been in any accidents. There's something going on that's a manufacturer's issue. And if a structural warranty doesn't cover a cracked frame, I don't know what it does cover.
Yeah. Michelle?
Well, it again depends on the exact language of your warranty, and if that says that the company, the manufacturer, has the right to try and correct or cure the problem, you have to give them that opportunity if you want your warranty honored. You can demand or suggest other things, but if they're honoring their warranty and following through based on what it says, then if you're declining to allow them to do that, then you're working outside of the warranty. So you can make all those suggestions, but you can ask them what kind of payback or investment they'll make in getting the trailer to them 5 hours away or something, and bring those problems up in doing that. But they're honoring their warranty by allowing for these corrections. And then maybe the next step is that it will fail again and they'll replace, but they're following through. The other complication is this whole transaction took place in Michigan rather than here in Wisconsin. So if you need to file a complaint, the jurisdiction, all the transaction took place in Michigan. So it may default to filing in Michigan. You know, you could file a complaint with us if you get nowhere, but depending upon how it sorts out, we may end up transferring your complaint.
No, well, there you go. Thanks, Tim, for calling, and good luck. Judy in Green Bay, hello. Let's see, I'm sorry, Sherry, we're going to go to Sherry and Nina. Sherry, hi, thank you for calling.
Hi, thanks. I just had a quick question. I get a lot of junk mail, and sometimes I get junk mail with my maiden name, and I've been at the residence for over 11 years, and I've never lived there with that last name. So I'm always wondering, how do they get my old name to my current address for like credit card applications and just different mail like that.
Well,
Michelle?
There's a huge database out there that the Direct Marketers Association and the credit card offers, credit card companies have out there. So they're able to make all these different connections and movement, and plus your credit history when they ask for information from the credit reporting agencies, these pings that they get, they're getting information and able to make all these connections there. So you can minimize your junk mail that you get, general junk mail, by contacting the Direct Marketers Association. You can go online and indicate that. That should lessen your junk mail that you get. You can also, a second source that you can go to minimize the credit card offers you get, is you can go online to www.optoutprescreen.com, and that will minimize the number of pre-approved credit card offers that you get. There's
okay.
also a phone number for that, and that's 1-888-5-OPT-OUT. So 1-888-567-8688.
Okay.
And that will minimize those credit card offers.
Mm-hmm. Thank you, Sherry, for calling. Now, let's go to Judy in Green Bay. Judy, hi. Thanks for calling.
Hello. I have a complicated problem, and I was told to simplify it, so I'm trying. A few months ago, I had calls from all kinds of friends that they had gotten a letter from me saying that I was in trouble in Spain. They knew I would be going to Spain, but this was 2 months beforehand. I went to my computer, and I wasn't getting any emails at all. So I tried AOL. When I went to AOL Technical Services Help. Now I realize there's a lot of companies that pay for ads, that no matter what you type in, they can come up under that heading. So I went to a technical services company thinking it was AOL, and it wasn't. And they said, oh, they could fix it. All I had to do was give them all my information, and they did. And eventually, 3 hours later, it got fixed, and payment was to go to a, not PayPal, but a company like that. And it was close to $500, and I was upset, but the computer was working again, and I had to have it for some business purposes. Well, a month later, they called and asked me to rescind my payment because the intermediate company was not forwarding the money to them.
Oh.
And I refused. But I realized I got myself into a scam. I called my credit card company, and they said they couldn't do anything because my computer did get cleaned up. So now I am extremely leery of anything, and caution people to take computers to reputable companies to get fixed and not try.
Yeah. And I'm sure you would agree with that, Sandy Chalmers.
Yes, I would. And there are local computer repair shops in almost everywhere in the state. And you know they're reputable, and you can get references from people who actually live in your town. But what she brings up is this look-alike, sound-alike, where if you type in the web address and you're one letter off, you may be somewhere else in, you know, a crook somewhere in Malaysia or who knows where. So, buyer beware on the internet too, and that's something that we hear about quite often are these look-alike, sound-alike type companies.
Thank you, Judy, for calling. We had a Facebook post from Kat, and this has to do with healthcare. Healthcare.gov for information on the Affordable Care Act, what people are calling Obamacare. Many spam and spam websites exist on this. So she's saying don't use .com or .org, only use healthcare.gov to learn more. This kind of goes along with what you were saying in a way.
Yeah, when the Affordable Care Act was being debated in Congress, there was some talk about how it would impact Medicare, and people were frightened that they may lose Medicare. Well, Crux took advantage of that, and we had a spike in complaints from people who were getting calls from people saying, you need to pay $19.95 for a new Medicare card, and if you don't pay, you're going to lose your Medicare benefits. And so there are a lot of... We've heard that this is expected, but we haven't actually seen any here of Affordable Care Act scams recently.
Well, that's good to know anyway. John in La Crosse, hi, thanks for calling.
Yeah, my call is concerning the Do Not Call list. The other day I just renewed the state Do Not Call, but there's a nationwide one. Does a nationwide one trump the state, or does the state trump? We just got to do one or both, or how is that?
They actually work together very nicely. We do recommend that people sign up for both the state list and the federal list, because where the federal list is stronger in some areas and the state list and law are stronger in some areas. So by signing up on both lists, you're nicely covered. For example, the federal law bans all robocalls to wireless phones, and federal law also has a don't call me back provision where you just say don't ever call me back, and they should honor that. So they work together in tandem very, very nicely.
Okay, what is the federal either email or website or phone number?
If you go to the Federal Trade Commission website, you'll see a link to sign up for the federal list. It's okay. The federal list is called the Do Not Call list.
Okay. Thank you.
Yeah, thanks a lot for calling. And Joanne in Forest County, hi, thanks for calling.
Hi.
What's on your mind?
The reason I'm calling is we've been getting repeater calls from area code 414, which I know is Milwaukee County area, and it's telling you, or me, I should say, that I'm entitled to $3,500. That's what they said in the beginning. The call yesterday said $3,500 in coupons plus a free medical alert bracelet. And at that point, I hang up because I don't want them tracing me at all any further than that. But I have had at least 6 calls, and I'm wondering if the office is aware of it, consumer's office is aware of it, that call is going up. Because I'm sure when people hear they're going to get $3,500 for nothing, they might bite on something.
Yeah, Michelle, right in.
We have had reports that there's been a new spike and an increase in these medical alert, senior alert scam calls that are going out there. So great job hanging up, Joanne, and not engaging in the telephone call. And it's good advice for all consumers to just not pick up the phone if it's a number you don't recognize, or just hang up on it if it's an automated call right away, and don't engage. Don't press any buttons. Just hang up.
Yep, absolutely. Thanks, Joanne. And Stephen Hayward, hi, thank you for calling.
Thank you for taking my call. Question if this is a scam. We have a high-end motorcycle for sale on Craigslist. We had a text message on it, and he said he would pay PayPal. He would have a third party pick up the motorcycle, and he never questioned the cost of the motorcycle. And when we went back and forth with text messages, he said he would only pay for PayPal, and we said we would only take cash, and when we said we only take cash, his correspondence stopped with us.
Yeah, that's a very common Craigslist scam. And Craigslist itself recommends that you do business with somebody local. There are so many people, especially in Western Africa, who take advantage of people via Craigslist. And again, before you post something for sale on Craigslist, you can pretty much predict that you're going to be getting texts and emails from people with all kinds of stories and all different kinds of ways to get at your money. So read the fraud alerts on Craigslist before you post your merchandise. And usually they'll target those high dollar value items like jewelry or motorcycles, boats, things like that.
So are they going to ask for our PayPal account? And then I'm not quite sure how the scam works.
Well, it's difficult to know, but we have seen a number of different scams involving motorcycles, ATVs, boats, involving Craigslist buyers.
Yeah.
So we did the right thing. Thank you.
You certainly did. And, oh, man, we have an email from Jim in Mequon. 6 months ago, notified by three different companies, he was to confirm personal details to pay for purchases I did not make. Realized that my Social Security number had been stolen. Reported it to the local police and the FTC. Put a freeze on our credit report for free. How long does the freeze last? Should I pay to renew it? I have no more reports of fraudulent action since. Did the bad guys give up because of the freeze?
Well, when you've been a victim of identity theft, then you are entitled to a fraud alert for 90 days that they will place on for free. After that, you can, and if you're a victim and have filed the police report, you can file a security freeze for free as well with the credit reporting agencies. I think that's for 1 year. You'll want to check with the credit reporting agencies on that because I'm not 100%. But then after that, you decide, as you know, how are you going to monitor and at what level of risk do you think you're at based on what happened? If it's a credit card number being stolen and you place it and you get a new number, that's probably a lower risk than your Social Security number being out there. Did they catch the person? Didn't they catch the person? Did you get a new Social Security number? So it's a $10 to put a freeze on. Once you put the freeze on, it's until you decide to lift it. So you just have to weigh all that.
Then it's another $10 to get it lifted.
Yeah, and then to replace it again. So
we had a Facebook post from Barb. My father and mother-in-law died in about 1986. My sister-in-law died in 2005. I still occasionally get advertising mail at my address where they never lived, addressed to them. I used to send it back, but that did no good, so now I just ignore it.
Yeah, it sounds like a good idea as long as you just don't engage. It may be addressed to you forwarding if you were the executor and things had to come to you in your name. There's lots of ways that ends up happening. But just ignore it and don't engage. Maybe open it, double check something's not going on, but just ignore it.
And in our last 30, 45 seconds, any final last words, Sandy?
Keep an eye out for the tech support scams. We know they're spiking again over the last month or so. And again, this is where you get a call from out of the blue saying we're from Microsoft or we're from and the name of an antivirus software company saying we've identified a problem and, you know, all you have to do is pay us or let us take control of your computer. Watch out for that one.
Well, it's always a pleasure. Thank you both so much. We'll look forward to your next visit.
Thank you.
Our guests today, Sandy Chalmers and Michelle Reinen from the Bureau of Consumer Protection of our Wisconsin Department of Agriculture, Trade, and Consumer Protection. They'll be back, and we will work with them again for sure. We usually don't get much in the way of scams relating to veterinarians and veterinary medicine. That's kind of good. Dr. Sandy Sawchuk is our guest tomorrow from the UW School of Veterinary Medicine. And she has some great advice on keeping your pets healthy and happy. Stay with us. Lots in store here on the Ideas Network.